Welcome to Break Room Chats, the podcast of the New Professionals section of the Library Leadership and Management Association of ALA. I'm Elizabeth Davidson, Director of Library and Information Services at Mitchell College, and today I'm honored to speak with Priscilla Carter. So welcome, Drew.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
No, we're so very glad that you could call in today. We usually kick off the interview with asking our guests to talk a little bit about their current positions and a brief description of what it is that you do.
Well, I am the director at the Willimantic, Connecticut Public Library, and I always tell people when they ask what a director does that I fill out paperwork and I go to meetings so that other people can do the fun stuff. Basically, I do all of the financial, human resources, planning kinds of things that go on behind the scenes so that other people can go read stories and check out books, and I'm very jealous of them, but anyway.
No, I relate. That's certainly part of being what a director does. Can you tell us a little bit about the town that you work in with regards to your position?
So I work in the town of Willimantic, which in a very uniquely Connecticut kind of thing is actually part of another town. So we are the town of Willimantic. I work for the town of Windham. There are four, I believe, service districts in Windham, which include the town of Willimantic. Don't try to understand it. It's just how Connecticut does things. Windham is the part outside of Willimantic, which technically we are the public library that serves the entire town of Windham, including the non-Willimantic parts. It is very rural. Windham has more Victorian houses per capita than anywhere else in the country. Just kind of an odd fact, but so we have all these gorgeous old houses. And then we have Willimantic, and Willimantic is very urban. We are the only urban center in the northeast part of Connecticut. We are a university town. We have Eastern Connecticut State University here. We have a large Hispanic population. We're about 40% Hispanic or Latino, which is extremely high for Connecticut because I think the average is around 10%. We have a large transient population. We have the only homeless shelter in the northeastern part of the state, so we have a homeless population as well. So we're kind of a very diverse corner surrounded by a really stereotypical Connecticut rural kind of farming community, which makes this a really interesting place to work.
I think that I would absolutely agree with that assessment of your situation. Can you talk a little bit about the library and how it tries to meet all those needs? Because it sounds as though you have a very well-to-do and historic arena that you're coping with, all the way down the spectrum to a very large transient and homeless population.
Yes, we do. And that means that we get an incredible array of requests for services and resources on any given day. So we try really hard to be a community center, and we try to be welcoming to everyone. It does mean that we do have patrons who come in who may be a little uncomfortable because there's a couple of homeless guys reading the newspaper in the reading area, but we also want those homeless guys to feel that they're welcome here. We do have, I believe it's a full quarter now of the staff speak Spanish fluently, and we have another quarter of the staff that can at least get by. So when the Spanish-speaking population comes in, we have resources in Spanish. We can translate for them. We can answer questions. So they're not dealing with the language barrier, as well as a lot of them come in never having used a library before. We try to do a lot of outreach to various groups in town, including I work with the head of the homeless shelter and also the head of one of the substance abuse treatment centers here in town to try to identify ways that we can help the patrons that we have in common. We do a lot of things, you know, just trying to have a welcoming attitude and a very open attitude is a sort of a core of what we do here, just because we do have such an incredibly diverse population. And we also do a lot of trying to make sure that everybody is comfortable with the fact that we want everyone to be comfortable here.
That sounds like a huge challenge.
We do have some people who come in and look around and go, you know. We do have a security guard here, and that is partially because with the transient population and the homeless population, there's issues that go along with those populations. So we partially have a security guard for safety. We also partially have the security guard because there are a lot of people who instantly become more comfortable with things when they see someone roaming around with a shirt that says security, even if it's a 22-year-old kid wearing the shirt. It's kind of amazing. And we try to make sure that if we have a situation, if we have someone who's acting up, if we have someone who maybe has an untreated mental illness, we try to work to minimize the amount of disruption that they cause to anyone else without making that person feel uncomfortable or unwelcome. So it's a challenging thing to do, but I'm lucky. I have a really good staff who are really good at this and do a lot of being very patient and nodding and smiling, which is kind of what it calls for.
Wow, that, frankly, I'm boggled because that sounds like an incredible challenge and one that can be both hard and rewarding. How did you get to this point? Can you talk a little bit about your career path?
Well, I actually started, I decided to go to graduate school for library science and history because I wanted to work in a nice, quiet museum library somewhere, or maybe an archive, dealing with like curators and museum patrons and stuff. And that's what I did all through grad school. That was my internships were all in museum libraries and archives. And I honestly have no recollection of applying for my first director's job. I can't imagine that I would have been like, oh, look, there's a public library in the middle of nowhere, South Carolina, that needs a director. I think I'll apply. So I don't remember applying, but I got a phone call offering me an interview, and I secretly suspect that they were like, combing the lists of recent graduates just to, like, call them and be like, thanks for applying, ha, ha, ha. anyhow, so I went for an interview. I had gotten home from the interview, and about 15 minutes later they called and offered me the job, and so I'm not really sure what that library board was smoking at the time, but clearly they had all lost their minds. And then I clearly had also lost my mind because I accepted the job, never having worked in a public library before.
Do you think that you were just feeling brave? Like, what was Drusilla of the past thinking at that time?
I was kind of, I have to say, I was one of those people, my background before I went to grad school was in arts administration. So I had managed a nonprofit. I was used to being a director. I was used to being in charge. And I kind of thought, well, I can either start at the bottom and work my way up eventually, or heck, I can just start as a director now. And I could see that there were a lot of opportunities for this library system that I started at, and I kind of went for it and then spent the next, like, 2 years going, what the hell am I doing here? But again, was really lucky, had a phenomenal staff. I was the fifth library director that they had in 5 years.
Oh, wow.
So the staff at that point pretty much could run things without a director. They really didn't need me there, which was really good because it meant that I could kind of learn the ropes with an incredible support system from the staff. They were just really glad to have someone to go to the meetings and fill out reports and things that they really didn't want to do. So it gave me a really great chance to kind of figure out what being a director was all about. And I moved from, that was an extremely rural library system, five facilities in rural South Carolina. I went from there to a regional public library system in the mountains of Virginia with seven facilities in the three municipalities. So every time I had to do a budget report, I had to do three. So I had to do one for each mayor.
I do one for one library for one administration. That sounds very intimidating.
It was really exciting when I realized that I had to do three of everything. And I had some staff that only worked at the branch in one municipality, so they were employees of that municipality and not system employees, and it got very confusing. And then 3 years ago, I came up here to Connecticut, to Willimantic, and I still remember at the interview for this job, they said, so, do you think you'd have a problem preparing a budget? And I thought, only one? And so here I am. So I've gone from extremely rural to a mix of urban and rural to a very urban library. So I've kind of covered all the bases, and I still don't know what on earth I'm doing in a public library because that's not what I plan to do at all.
Well, and I was going to say, you ended up sticking with the public library systems.
I did, and one of the things I love about being a public librarian is I never know what on earth I'm going to be doing when I come in. We do a little bit of everything. We deal with such a variety of people. I do occasionally get to work with archives and local history information. In fact, I did just last week, working with someone from the local historical society who was trying to track something down. But at the same time, I may be out talking to another nonprofit about how we can work together. I may be working the desk, helping patrons. I may be talking to the mayor about why we need money. I never know what I'm going to be doing, which I really like.
There's a real variety there, absolutely. Well, I'm pretty curious, actually, having learned a bit about your history, to hear about how you relate to your management style, because it sounds like you started out administering in a very different field, and then we're looking to continue into something of a blend of that field, art and history and librarianship, and then ended up in a public library position with first branches, then more branches in different municipalities, and now one library, albeit related to two different towns.
Yes. And I also went from, in my previous two libraries, I was it. I reported to a board. The board was governing. But day-to-day administration, human resources and such, that was me. I was it. Here, I actually report to the town manager. If I have a human resources issue, I have a head of personnel to call. It's awesome. I can be like, hi, I have a problem. I need help. And it's his job to deal with it. It's fabulous. I really think that I was very lucky that I had administrative experience before I started this. I think if I started my first director's gig with no administrative experience, I would have been sunk. But I was lucky that I had managed people and I had managed projects and had kind of started to feel out what my management style was already. And I was also lucky that I had some really great examples to follow. I also had some really bad ones. The one that I think I learned the most from is the boss I once had who had no sense of humor. He's the only person I have ever met that I never heard him laugh at all, ever, under any circumstances. He had no sense of humor. And it was terrible. And working for him was just awful.
That sounds very intimidating.
It was just, you know, you couldn't ever joke about how horrible something was. You couldn't ever try to lighten a situation with humor. And it was really hard to connect with him because there was no humor available. But then I was also really lucky that I had, especially in graduate school, I had two supervisors for internships who really supported their staff, but also kind of let us do our own thing. So it was, this is your project, you figure out how to do it, and I will be here to help and to get you the resources you need, but it's your project and you do your thing. And that was really to watch how some staff members really blossomed under that kind of leadership was great to see. So I try to be very open door. My door is open right now, actually. So at any moment, someone could stick their head in and, you know, be like, hi, I need to interrupt you. If my door is closed, people start panicking, which was not really the intent. Like, I could probably close my door and take a nap, and everyone would be like, oh, my God, something terrible is going on. But my door is always open.
Because it's just that normal.
Yeah, it's so out of the ordinary. I encourage people to stop in. My janitor sticks his head in, and he sits in the chair and chats with me. Random patrons come in. The page comes in to tell me how she thinks we could do something better or she has this idea for something. And I also try to be really collaborative. I want people to feel like, yes, I'm the boss, but I'm not in charge of everything. You know, it's not something that I take really seriously. I always say I don't like having to wear my director hat. I would rather collaborate with people to get where we need to go and kind of lead by example. You know, if I want people to greet patrons who come in with a smile, then I need to do that first. And that's from watching a couple of supervisors that I had in the past, especially in graduate school, who that's how they were. They provided the example and kind of expected you to live up to it. And I try.
Absolutely.
And sometimes I even provide a good example, although maybe not always.
Well, every now and again, it's probably not a bad thing to watch the leader take a little bit of a stumble, so you know it's okay too. What came naturally to you? It sounds like you had some really excellent examples of leadership and management that you wanted to mimic, but that you also had a couple that you wanted to avoid. What felt really natural as you were stepping into the shoes of a director?
One of the things that I was actually really surprised that it came naturally is a big part of being a director is playing politics. You may not think of it that way, but every time I interact with a patron, every time I go to town council, every time I talk to the mayor or my board, I'm trying to build connections so that people will support the library. And I remember in graduate school, it was kind of mentioned, like, you know, advocate for your library and you need to politic with people to get support. And I was like, oh God, that sounds really impossible. And it's actually something that came really naturally to me. And I think part of that's because I have people skills. I like people, which I think kind of shows. I like working with people. So the communication skills and the networking and building support for the library came really naturally. Public speaking, I mean, I'd been in an arts background, so even if you don't spend a lot of time on stage, you have to learn how to be on stage. So public speaking wasn't an issue. I'm also lucky in a lot of ways that I'm young for a director, which means that I grew up with more technology. So we do so much that is so technology-centered. And a director has to know, okay, what are we going to spend our technology budget on? What's going to be the most useful? And I was really lucky that I had that background. And so doing a technology plan kind of came very naturally to me.
Absolutely. And So it sounds like you had very good foundations on that front. Were there things that you found more challenging to bring into your toolkit?
I think one of the ones, and honestly, it's not that it's that hard. People will tell you, oh, God, preparing a budget and budgeting is so challenging. It's not challenging. It's really boring. I mean, I don't want to be thinking about, gosh, can I afford the toner for that? I want to be thinking about, if we had the toner for that printer, we could do this really cool thing with it. So budgeting my first year, I was very lucky that I had someone who was kind of going behind me, my assistant in that job. Her position involved going through and going, okay, you want me to pay this bill? You want me to, you know, this is where the money is coming from. And so she could kind of go, we really don't have any money in that account. you know, you really can't do that. Or the flip side of that is, we haven't spent any money out of this line item. You probably might want to think about actually, like, using some of it. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, I guess I could. and that, not so much that it's difficult, but remembering to pay attention to it was something that was challenging because I want to be out there doing cool stuff. I don't want to be thinking about how we're going to pay for it because that's really not a lot of fun. The other thing that I had a really hard time dealing with is when you are an administrator, one of the things that you have to do is you have to deal with the staff members and the patrons who are really not happy or who mm-hmm. have done something really stupid, and you have to tell them that they did something really stupid. Managing conflict and dealing with discipline, especially of staff, you know, a lot of times library staff, people don't tend to work in libraries because they're not nice people. They mean really well, but they do something stupid or they violate a policy, and I have to be the one to go, okay, guys, you know, now we have a problem because you've done this. And I still grapple with that because I really don't like being the bad guy. But that's part of my job, is to be the one who goes, okay, you know, you screwed up. Now there are consequences. Or the one who has to tell the patron, you know what, you're making a scene in my library, you're causing problems, I need you to leave now.
Right, you have to call that security guard that's there.
You know, let me call my, you know, 22-year-old security guard and have him escort you out or what have you. And that was one of the things that I had to learn to do. And I've been told several times recently that I handle situations like that well, so I guess I'm learning, but I feel like I have some more learning left to do on that front.
And that sounds like something that is very good advice to keep in mind for most people, is that it is a continual learning process, potentially. Now, looking back, are there any things that you think you do differently, or was it really just finding your feet as you went along?
I think I would have, when I first started as a director, you know, I came in, the staff had seen four other directors come and go in the previous 5 years, so they didn't have a whole lot of incentive to pay attention to me. I was 27, so I was quite young. Most of my staff were at least 15 years older than I was. And I think I relied too much on trying to be nice, which is natural, especially for women in management positions. We want to be nice. We want to be liked. It's kind of hardwired into us. And I didn't really start taking the fact that I was the one in charge and that I needed that to be respected seriously soon enough. And I think particularly in my first position, you know, it's a hard thing to do when you're trying to figure out what the hell your job is and why you're the one doing it. You know, what am I doing here?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say at this, yes, I need to learn how to do this, but at the same time, I am the one who is in charge. And
right.
I will expect that level of respect. And I probably should have worked on that sooner. It's coming more naturally now that I've been doing this for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of grows with you. But I think some of the problems that I had, especially in my first position, I would not have had certain difficulties if I had just gone with the, yes, I am in charge, and yes, this is my library, and I need to just kind of embrace that and run with it.
Wow, absolutely. Well, Matt, you know what? That actually segues really well into one of the questions we like to ask all of our guests, which is, what are some skills you didn't learn in library school that you would have found useful? And we usually ask in your current job, but I'm actually going to open it up for you because I feel like, speaking of someone who came into a leadership position very early, speaking of someone who came into not the position that you had originally designed your trajectory for, and certainly as someone who's worked in a real variety of workplaces, what skills would you have liked to have learned for any of those that you would have found useful?
My default response for, you know, what did you not learn in library school is what to do when a patron proposes.
Oh, my.
Because that happened my second year in South Carolina. I had a patron who I had never seen before come to the desk. I happened to be the only one on the desk at the time and proposed. And what do you do?
Were they serious? I have to ask, were they
he
they
was
serious?
Absolutely serious. Told him that our policies prohibited library staff from entering into any kind of relationship with patrons, which was completely untrue, but was all I could think of at the time.
As somebody who is also a library director, I would be very comfortable with any of my staff coming back on that.
And then this particular individual said, well, you know, maybe we could make an exception. And I was like, well, I'll have to bring that to the board. And he came back in a couple of times over the next several days and just sort of sat and stared. It was kind of disturbing. And then he disappeared. We didn't see him anymore, and I happened to know which apartment he lived in, so I knew his landlord. His landlord was the husband of a friend of mine. And I said something, and she was like, oh, yes, he was involuntarily committed to the mental hospital last week. So, yes, in order to propose to me, you have to be mentally ill, clearly. But really what that was my first real introduction into working with the mentally ill, and it's something that I don't even think was mentioned in grad school. And admittedly, I was not focusing on public libraries, but it's something that I think every librarian deals with. Certainly I know academic librarians, school librarians, if you have parents or students who are mentally ill, it's something that you need to be able to deal with. And it was just never brought up. And it's something that, especially in a library like mine, we see a lot of untreated mental illness. You know, we have one woman who comes in and uses the computer, and she has lengthy conversations with someone that the rest of us can't see.
Mm-hmm.
We have people coming in with substance abuse problems, and we do kind of enforce that you have to be sober when you're here, but that may mean that we've got somebody who's coming down from a high who may have issues, and that was never discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
mm-hmm.
something that I had to do a lot of educating myself about and really could have used a little more preparation for. But yes, please have your answer ready just in case anyone ever comes in and proposes to you.
I'm going to have to put some thought into that, I think, at this point in time. Now that I know that that's a concern I should keep in mind.
Well, you know, I like to tell people to be prepared. A couple of the other things that we didn't learn, you know, I know they mentioned advocacy and library advocacy. It was like, oh, yes, this is one of those things you have to do. And then we went on to other things like how to catalog. And I really didn't realize until I got to this position, and I know it's true of a lot of other administrators and directors, we didn't realize how crucial advocacy is and how it's not, oh, gee, the budget vote is, you know, next Tuesday at 5 p.m., so I should start my advocating now. It's constant. It's 24/7. It's vital to what we do. And I don't know if my professors in grad school were focused on things like we have to get these basic skills in, or if it just never occurred to them how incredibly important it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I really could have used some background in that before I found myself running a public library where I had to convince people to give us money.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yes, they should keep all of our branches open, and yes, we were kind of important. And yeah, that was really kind of frightening the first time I realized that, holy cow, this is on my shoulders, that I have to make this happen.
Right. Absolutely. Well, knowing what you do now and having talked a little bit about the skill sets that you didn't get, many of which, and again, I did, my focus was in academic libraries as well, less public libraries, though my school and a lot of the high schools we work with certainly see similar issues. What kind of training classes or professional development do you like to recommend? Or is there anything that you have taken advantage of or that you would like to take advantage of, but maybe it's not local or convenient?
I think it's important to know what you as an individual need more training on. I mean, for me, I don't really need to go to another class on how to deal with mentally ill patrons because I've now been to like 17 of them because I went,
mm-hmm.
oh my God, I don't know how to do this, and found those advantages. Sort of in general, I tell people, you know, I have a former staff member who's just starting library school. She's one of our pages. And I told her, I said, you need to be open to any opportunity that comes along. So, you know, somebody might say, hey, there's this training opportunity in I don't know what, you know, something that you might, photography is one that I can think of. That somebody said, hey, we're doing this workshop on photography. And I went, well, I don't know why I need to know that. I'm a librarian. And it turned out that it was really helpful because, think about it, you take photos to put on Facebook, to put on the website. We're putting together brochures and flyers. And now I at least have kind of that basic how to take a photograph knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like to tell people, I mentor a library student now, and I told him, you know, it's great that you're talking to me, but go find other people who are doing what you think you might want to do,
mm-hmm.
even if maybe it's not in the same setting that you think you want to do it. You know what? Invite yourself to their library or take them to coffee or something and just kind of pick people's brains. And the advice that I got as a graduate student that is actually the most useful is to go to non-library workshops and conferences. So, yes, you can go to something like my photography workshop that's run by librarians for librarians, but I actually learn a lot more when I go to something that is not by and for librarians.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a really interesting conference last year at a university in Rhode Island that was designed for municipal leaders. So I think I was the only librarian there, and for unknown reasons, there were like 25 fire chiefs.
Oh.
Well, if the building burns down, we're really safe. But it was designed for municipal leaders, and it was about community safety. And
which is very important in public libraries, absolutely.
It is important in libraries, But I really don't think it had ever occurred to anyone there that a librarian might want or need to know this. I'm lucky that our local fire chief said, hey, there's this conference happening, and I'm
you
going.
You should go.
You might be interested. But I learned a lot, and it was really helpful in a lot of ways to have it from a non-library perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it kind of, you're kind of looking at things as an outsider, which kind of gets the wheels turning, I think, a little bit more than we are all librarians and we are all going to talk about how great our patrons are and if there's ever a problem. And meanwhile, like, these are fire chiefs and policemen and stuff, and they're going, when someone bombs your town hall,
oh my God.
This is what you need to know. And I'm
very
like,
different perspective.
Yeah, completely. Not, you know, your patrons are all going to be nice, even when they threaten to bomb. They're like, women and children first, you know, man the lifeboats. It was really educational.
In a lot of ways, it sounds like.
Yes, and I now know about 50 fire chiefs, which is great. You know, if my building's ever on fire, I will feel very safe.
Yes, you can call them right in.
I have, like, half of their cards. I can be like, hey, guys, my building seems to be on fire.
Can we do something about this situation?
Yeah, could you please, you know, bring something over and do something about it? But someone told me that when I was in grad school, and at first I thought, well, you know, why would I want to do that? I'm a librarian. But it really is incredibly educational to find things that relate to you as a librarian but are from a non-library perspective.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense given the variety of people and situations that we all deal with. Well, I feel like we have covered a vast amount of the potential answer for the question, for the last question we usually close out with, which is, what would you tell librarians in training? I mean, you can't see listeners out there in the podcast world, but I just use finger quotes. And this is keeping in mind, I'm glad that you appreciate that, oh, other child of the 80s and 90s. But this is keeping in mind that we're hoping our audience isn't all LIS grads or new LIS grads, but potentially people who are thinking maybe for the first time about looking at a leadership or management position.
Mm-hmm. So I have two things, and one is my own personal pet peeve, and this actually, I was looking at these questions and clearly thought of, I spoke at a panel on Wednesday that was run by the state judicial branch, and there must have been 150 people there, and I think 12 of us were librarians, and 10 of the 12 were speaking, which was like this really weird ratio. I was there, you know, we're with a bunch of judicial branch people, so they're 99% lawyers, and they're all government employees, and they're all in suits and ties, and then the librarians come in. And I'm in a skirt and blazer, because that's how I dress. And there were a couple of other librarians there that I was trying to come up with a good descriptive phrase, and all I could think of was kindergarten teachers going to Walmart.
Oh, boy.
And you see that when you go to conferences. You see it at state conferences. You see it when you go to ALA. You see it at professional gatherings. It's one of my pet peeves, but it's partially because as an administrator, as a leader in the library world, we're supposed to be trying to get people to take our profession and our libraries seriously. And now bear in mind that I'm saying this as someone who currently has bright purple hair, but I'm wearing a suit and heels, so at least, you know, I'm at least partially blending in. It's not that you can't have fun. It's not that you can't be creative. But if you want to be taken seriously as an administrator by the people that you need to take you seriously so they will give you money and keep your library open, you need to not look like you sit on the floor and play with children all day, even if that's really what you'd rather be doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I will also point out that I did not dye my hair purple until I had gotten $1 million in grant funding for my library, so, you know, I can get away with things like that now because the town's like, oh, my God, you got us money.
Make sure that she doesn't leave.
Yeah, fine, if she wants purple hair, whatever. But I know that just watching at town council, for example, where I was on Tuesday night, I was in a dress and a blazer. The head of HR who was there asking the council to approve a contract, he was in a suit and tie. There were a couple of other department heads there in khakis and polo shirts, and they weren't unprofessional looking, but I wouldn't have looked at them if I didn't know they were department heads. I wouldn't have looked at them and gone, well, yes, they're in charge of an organization. And I noticed that the town council and the mayor took those of us who were dressed, like I always say, I have to dress like a grown-up now. Those of us mm-hmm. who were dressed like grown-ups got taken much more seriously and treated as though we knew what the heck we were talking about.
Right.
And the people who were dressed more casually got grilled a little more, and I don't think that's just coincidence. So that's my – I will now step off my soapbox about how librarians dress, but that's kind of my thing. And the other thing I would say to you know, new managers or people who think they might want to be managers or possibly maybe think they want to be directors or what have you, I think it's really important to be open and adaptable. I see too many people who come in, you know, other directors, and they're like, I know what is going to be good for this library, and we need to change how things are done. And I always say when I start that I won't make any changes for 6 months. Because mm-hmm. I need to know not only what is happening, but why. I mean, maybe something is only done because it's always been done that way, but maybe there's a really good reason that it was done that way. And maybe it's a good idea after all, or the best of a bunch of bad options, as the case may be. But I think being adaptable and open to new ideas and, you know, don't assume that just because you're the one in charge, you know more. I have a staff member here who's been here for 40 years. Her 40-year anniversary is next week. And, you know, there's a lot of times that she knows more about what's going on than I do because she's been here for a really long time.
She's seen the history and the politics and so on.
But it would be really easy for me as a director coming in to be like, well, she works the circulation desk. What does she know?
And she knows a lot.
You know, it's really important to avoid that kind of mindset. And I see too many new administrators kind of getting trapped in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I always want to stand up and be like, no, don't do it. And your staff get mad and, you know, it just gets really ugly really fast.
Right. Whereas on the other hand, once you've had those 6 months, then potentially you could make those changes, I think, is what
I mean,
it sounds
then
like.
If you've shown that you listen and that you are adaptable and you are looking out for the best interests of the library and the staff, then when you go to make changes after 6 months, people are like, okay, you know, we think she has a reason for doing this. Maybe she just didn't drink her coffee today, but we'll at least give her the benefit of the doubt.
That sounds like a favorable reference to me, at least with regards to staff opinions.
I sometimes think that, well, we'll give her a chance is about the best you can hope for.
That sounds very familiar, actually. Well, Drusilla, thank you so much for joining us today on Break Room Chats with the new professional section of LLMA. Listeners out there, we will have our next podcast up and running, of course, within the next month. And, Drew, I hope that we will have a chance potentially to talk in the future and very soon.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yep. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you for listening to Break Room Chats. To continue the conversation, please visit the New Professional Section Facebook page at facebook.com/groups/llama.nps. We're also on Twitter @llama_nps. This is Elspeth Olson, Heather James, and Elizabeth Davidson signing off. See you next time for more conversation.